Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights, brought to you by our friends at Training Pros. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good friend and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
I am doing well. Just two more sleeps until my wife comes back from Alaska, and then the advance press is no more road work for quite some time, at least through Christmas, so I'm jazzed.
Wow, end of year almost.
Yeah, but the rules around the house are going to change. I think, you know, a little bit less pizza and that kind of thing.
That's the cost of doing business.
So I'm having a good week. I'm excited about it. This is going to be a fantastic segment. We're going to visit with Dave Edelman from Training Pros, get caught up on what's going on in their world. But the main focus of today's panel is to talk about this big powwow that ASTD has coming up called ACE. So we have some aces from ACE to
there
visit
you go.
With. So we'll get a chance to learn a little bit about their businesses, but also about this conference and exposition and some of the things that they're going to speak about. But let's start by welcoming Big Dave back to the microphone. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really good, Stone. Thanks. How are you?
I am doing well. So why don't you give us a little bit of an overview? Because you're on this board with ACE, and you're tapped into this to some degree, right? To give us the overview.
Well, I'm involved with the community involvement group with mm-hmm. ASTD Atlanta. And I'm working with Jennifer Williams, who's the VP of Community Involvement, and so I kind of sit in on the board meetings and so forth. And last board meeting, I was sitting in, and I said, "Hey, you know, you guys could come. You want to promote ACE? You could come on the radio show." And here we are.
And they took you up on it.
Took us up on it. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start visiting with some of them, and let's start with Karen. Karen, you were with McGee Productivity Solutions, and you're a senior consultant there, Karen Mitchell. What got you involved with this ACE outfit?
You know, ACE is an excellent opportunity for me to bring our work to professionals in the corporate world who are interested in increasing productivity in their organizations.
Now, do you find that companies have too much productivity and got to ratchet it back? Is that what
the... No, it's the opposite, in fact. You know, so many companies, and I have the opportunity to deal with companies in Asia, Canada, Mexico, et cetera. So many companies have done a lot of right-sizing and downsizing and streamlining so that they can serve the client, get the product to the market. What they don't do a good job of is telling the worker what to stop doing.
Stop doing.
Exactly. So I help them focus on the really important things and stop doing the non-important stuff.
So how do you identify what's important and what's not so important?
It's really driven by objectives. So at the beginning of the year, people sit down with their managers. Mm-hmm. They develop a list of goals, objectives, those sorts of things. Many times they set those aside and then just do what they do every day.
Right. And until it's time to do their review, and then they bring back that sheet of paper, right?
And they stare at it and go, "I have no idea how to complete this." So I have them look at their objectives daily and schedule their time on their calendar to meet those objectives. So I kind of reverse the thinking.
So then that way their priorities are aligned with the objectives.
And their calendar lines up to their objectives. The things they do every day line up to their objectives. How they process their email, all of those things.
So what do you do when you find that the employees' objectives may not be completely aligned with the organization's objectives or their immediate supervisor's objectives?
You know, that's when we suggest that you renegotiate. Sit down and have a conversation with your manager, because the best thing that a worker can do is help his or her manager achieve his or her goals. So if there's an opportunity to renegotiate and say, "Hey, I'm spending time on this, but I see that you're being held accountable for something else," that's the time to have a really good conversation.
So the employee, you think, should be more proactive to inform their manager that they're a little out of alignment?
Yeah.
Does that really happen in real life?
Only if you suggest that people do that. Because people, I find that people generally think, "I'll just do what my boss tells me to do."
Right.
But we suggest that you create a powerful partnership with mm-hmm. your manager. And that means helping your manager achieve his or her objectives while doing the things that you're going to be held accountable for at the end of the year.
So when you go into these organizations and first start observing, do you find a lot of employees investing time in tasks that you know aren't productive and you've seen it before? Is that one of the first things you got to do, is kind of remove some of the dead weight out of their day?
Absolutely. Sometimes we do things because people ask us, because we've always done them, because those things are there, not because it makes sense.
Right.
So I ask people to get really granular about, will this drive your goals and objectives or not? Those things that don't drive the ejectus are the things you stop doing.
So how did you get into this line of work? Were you just always a very organized person and you had this compelling urge to get other people on task? Or how did you get into this?
You know, they say those who need it most teach. That certainly has been my situation. I spent 20 years in the corporate world and found that, you know, I, like everybody else, spent a lot of time doing non-value-added activities like email. You know, email has taken a life of its own on in most corporations. So I have found that if we put email in its proper place, people have time to do the stuff that they want to do. So I teach what I wish I had known when I was in the corporate world.
So now, are you of the ilk that you check email like once or twice a day at certain times?
It depends on your role. I suggest people scan email for emergencies. Sort of do a triage, get out if there's nothing on fire, and then do their job. And then, yes, spend time throughout the day, twice, three times a day, processing email, dealing with email, and then getting out and, again, doing their jobs.
But scheduling it, like I check email at 9, 1, and 5 or something like that?
Exactly. I have email processing time right on the calendar.
Nice. All right, I want to get these other two guys into the conversation. Brent Darnell and Dave Basarab. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
So I want to hear about your email disciplines and your productivity disciplines. Brent, is any of this ringing true for you?
Yes. I think I need to hire.
That's what we do here, Karen. We, you know, we put people together and we help them generate business. But no, I mean, it's something that we all struggle with, right? Productivity and...
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's part of what we teach. And we've even... I work with mostly technical people, mostly engineers and contractors, and they're pretty poor at this managing themselves during the day. So it's something that we all need, I think.
Well, yeah, do tell us a little bit more about your practice. You have a sweet spot of the type of people and type of organizations that you work with?
Well, I teach people skills to technical people.
Ouch.
Mostly contractors and engineers, and we use emotional intelligence as a foundation for that training. We also train them like athletes because we found this tie-in between the emotional and the physical. So if you don't take care of the emotional and the physical, then your results get diminished pretty quickly.
So now when you're training a technical person on this kind of emotional intelligence and the ability to communicate with the layperson, what are some of the challenges that you run across? Are they open to even acknowledging there's a problem, or you have to kind of work through their defenses and...
They're never open. It's always initial resistance. And it used to really freak me out, but now it's just part of the process. They always reject it first.
So how do they reject it in saying that they don't have a problem or it's the other person's problem? What's the...
That I'm really good at what I do and you're not going to fix me. And we make it clear we're not there to fix them at all, but we talk about performance. And if we could increase your performance, would you be interested? And they're always interested in that. So we kind of go at it that way where... It's about increasing performance, mental performance, physical performance, emotional performance.
Now, you have some very specific ideas about how to frame up learning opportunities and structuring everything down to the way the classroom should be structured and the instruction design. Speak to that a little bit.
Well, it's mostly because of abject failure throughout the course of my early dealings.
So scar tissue has informed your methodology.
Absolutely. And it was about, you know, learning is to create change. And I kept doing these great programs that were a day long and go away and do the magic cross sign over everyone and they magically change, and that just didn't happen. And we've all been to those, I call them three-ring binder programs. You know, you get your three-ring binder and you, what do you do with it? You put it on the shelf and you never look at it again until a year later you need the binder, right? So you take everything out, throw it away, and you reuse the binder. So that to me was traditional training and learning. So there's got to be a better way. So we make sure that all of our programs are a year long with lots of follow-up and coaching and self-coaching and even coaching from families and friends and spouses. You know, we bring them in on the process. And this, it's a year-long process. And then even at the end of the year, we have reunions every year where we check in. So it's continuous learning. It's ongoing learning.
All right, hit the brakes here for a minute. Yeah. So if you're working with me to help me become more emotionally intelligent, and there probably is some room for improvement on that front, you're going to get Holly and Katie and Kelly, my crowd, you're going to get my family involved in this process?
Yes.
And you get buy-in from the people on this?
No, we don't.
So is this like a theoretical constraint, or this actually has been worked in the wild somewhere?
It's actually working. And this is sort of recent, where we brought in the families and the spouses, but the results have just been life-changing.
It sounds like that intervention show.
Well, it is.
This is a reality show in the making right here. I got to believe. Don't you think, Karen?
I agree.
I've got a guy interested in it. He goes, you mean you take these alpha males and they transform into like human beings?
Right.
Say, yes. He goes, it's a reality show. Definitely.
Okay, so let's fix Dave. We have Dave Asarab with us. Into this family thing, Dave? What do you think?
Absolutely. Okay, but I'm not sure my family, but everybody else's family. Before we go, I want to talk about the email. I'm a big fan of what Karen does. I got trained in that 5 years ago. And if you look at my inbox, it's empty every day.
Love that.
Kudos to you. Now, you do predictive evaluation.
I do.
So I don't think I understand what that means. And I know Lee doesn't.
Well, think about it this way. The model came about, and I'm the measurement guy here. The model came about from my years as a chief learning officer. When I sat with the CEO and I says, what does a CEO value when he's trying to invest in a company? He wants to know two things. He wants to know value and when am I going to get my return for value. So when somebody asks for training, the training professionals show up and they say, oh, by the way, it's $600,000. I'll train 100 people. And all of a sudden, you're an activity, you're an expense. And you never say what you're going to return back. You just say, trust me, it'll be good, whether it's lifelong, whether it's productivity. But there's a disconnect between the trends. So the predictive evaluation model says, let's flip that. Let's act like business people. Let's forecast what we're going to do, and let's be on the same playing table if they're going to invest in a new truck, in a new plant, in a new facility. So we predict the value of training before we even start. Then we measure it along the way and correct it, just like if we're introducing the next iPad or the next cell phone or the next widget. Consider training as an investment in a product versus an event.
So when you predict, how good are you at predicting?
It's interesting you say that. The way I had to figure this out, there's a gentleman by the name of Dr. Noel Capon out of Columbia who's the world-leading expert in marketing. And when I sat with him at his brownstone in downtown New York, I realized that marketing is nothing but the best guess. All right. So we have to figure out how are we going to guess this. And I came up with a model that talks about three things. We're going to predict an employee's intentions. Are they planning to do the things the company wants them to do when they leave the event? Number two, does that translate into the right adopted behaviors on the job? If we get all of that, does it produce the value that the company wants? And so what we do is we take our best guess and see how it works in that strategy. I'd say we're about 75% accurate, but it's a heck of a lot better than holding your hand out and saying, give me $600,000 and hope and pray.
But when you say our best guess, it's not your best guess?
That's a great question. As an evaluator trainer, we don't own the results. We own the event that captures the results. So what I do is I include a steering committee of business leaders, executives who own that population that I'm trying to serve and say, you define what success looks like. We'll get a mutual definition of success in terms of results, and then we'll work towards that. Prediction starts the design, and then it measures progress along the way and corrects it if we need to, whereas most evaluation models are lag. They're way after the event. Mine is before and during.
I'm getting inspired by this because in a former life I used to sell training and consulting. And I'm thinking right now, if I were walking into a potential client's office with you and we offered the methodology to help implement a large complex change, but we were partnering with you to provide predictive evaluation, I got to tell you, I like my chances of talking to them about the investment in methodology versus the return on investment on three new trucks.
Yeah, so the conversation
I like that.
The conversation becomes this. Instead of saying, give me over the next 3 years, this is a real-life number, instead of give me $666,000 to train 300 executives, okay, what if I could promise you that in 3 years, I'm going to give you $1.1 million of additional value that does not exist today. And oh, by the way, to do that, you're going to have to give me $666,000. I'm going to return $1.2 million of value because you invested in training. Now, you want to buy trucks? You have every right to. Would you consider making this investment? You go from having what I call your hands under the table. Because anybody who asks for an investment, they put their hand, they can't see it on the radio. One, you put their hand out, give me this, and then I'll return this. And the problem is, if you get this, if you get this right here, then you get rewarded. If you don't get it, you get your hand slapped. Training people don't like to have their hands on top of the table. They like their hands under the table, and what do you get? Crumbs.
Now, do you focus primarily on helping internal consultants and trainers and staff, or do you also, like I was insinuating a moment ago, do you also partner with external providers so that they can have a distinct competitive advantage when they go to a client?
I do it three ways, absolutely. One, I have clients that I actually do this for as their third-party evaluator,
mm-hmm.
and I come in, and this is the auditing process. I train others on how to do this model, and then I go in with people like McGee and Darren, and we go in together, and I say, oh, by the way, it's a partnership. You're talking about an investment, not just activity.
Now, Karen, I'd like to talk to you about the virtual workforce. Is the productivity skills that you train when it's an internal, you know, a company that's, you know, all the employees are right there, all on site, everybody's there, is it the same strategies that you would use, like, with a virtual workforce where, you know, there's so many contractors out there that are working for a company, but they might have multiple, you know, clients. How do you get them productive and get them aligned and in their work when they're not, you know, full-time or they're not all in?
You know, the premise is the same no matter where you are. Mm-hmm. So essentially we bring together some modules that we know work. We know that it works, for example, to instead of looking at your inbox all day long, to look at your calendar and the commitments that you've made that day. So that's sort of our content. The second piece we bring to the table is the technology. We work with Microsoft technology, so we use their suite of products, the calendar, the task pad, and all of that. And then the third piece is the behavior of the individual and their willingness to change.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're firm believers in the fact that the choices you make get you the results that you realize.
Sure.
So those three areas come together no matter whom the worker happens to be. Then we tweak the content based on whether you're working in an office with others, because that environment sometimes provides lots of interruptions. So the idea there is to put parameters around which interruptions you will allow. Then we've got folks that are working virtually, and they feel a need in some instances to make sure that everybody knows they're working, so they feel that they've got to respond to email constantly so that people don't think that
like
they're
on top of it, right?
Exactly. So the message there is how you put parameters around your response times while still being responsive but not necessarily reactive.
Right.
So what's your take on this whole work-life balance conversation?
Yeah, I think work-life balance has had a huge impact on the corporate world worker today. And what we suggest is that people understand what it is they really want. So again, we talked about objectives at the outset of the show. Personal objectives are just as important as professional objectives. We find that many times people do a great job of listing their objectives and their goals for their work life, but they don't do such a good job of listing their goals and objectives for their personal life. So in our sessions, we suggest that they do the same. They pay
the same activity, but just aim it at your personal life. And then if you can get all of that aligned together, then I guess that's the goal, right?
Exactly, because we then hold ourselves accountable for what we want from our personal lives as well as from our professional lives. And I suggest that people schedule time on the calendar to get the things done that they want to get done personally as well.
Now, Dave mentioned that he has that zero empty inbox.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really possible?
If that's what you want, that's what you can have.
Well, I can have it in a second, but just by deleting all my emails. But like, is there?
Yes, and we provide methodology whereby, as I mentioned earlier, you get in the inbox, you process your emails to zero,
mm-hmm.
and then you go and work. And then when you come back, you process the emails that have come in since the last time you were there, and then you come back and do your job. It's much like the mailbox at the end of your driveway. You know, if you go to the mailbox at the end of your driveway, you empty the whole thing out, and then you sort the magazines.
You don't leave a couple in there for the next day.
Later.
Exactly. You clear everything out. You sort that mail. You do whatever you want with it. And then that mailbox is empty for the messages coming in the next day. So it's the same concept.
You had me at the stop doing list. As soon as this show is over, I am going to begin my stop doing list. I'm very excited about that.
To do perfect. And to not
do. And not to do. You know, sometimes it's more difficult to decide what not to do than it is the things that you really want to be doing.
Yeah. So, Brent, I got to ask, because you mentioned it very briefly, and I know this is something that Lee has an affinity for. You mentioned improv.
Yes.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit, because you're using it in your learning technology, right?
Yes. I'm a mechanical engineer by education, but I quit and became a full-time actor for about 3 years.
Wow.
And did a lot of improv and a lot of...
How'd that go over in the family?
Dad was so proud.
They're like high-fiving you, right?
Yeah, Dad was saying, oh, that's great, son. You're giving up your engineering and project management for acting. So proud. But it was great, and I did actually a show in Atlanta here called Frankie and Angie Get Married. It was back in the... 90s, 80s.
So you
90s.
Wrote it or you were?
No, I was in it. Uh-huh. I played the Joey Sprovieri, the mentally challenged brother of the groom. That was my role. So I did this improv show for a couple of years and did a lot of theater sports and improv stuff.
What is a theater sport?
It's a improv games and you keep score and you play against other teams and they have a winner and a loser.
There's a winner in improv.
Yes, there is. So I did that for a while and then went back to project management. And then I've been doing this training and development for about 12 years now. And I'm a member of, it's a applied improv network. So it takes improvisational exercises and applies them to business and learning and academia and how people learn and retain and apply information. So creation is the highest form of learning. So it's about having the participants create content, create activities, create whatever learning points you're trying to accomplish. They actually create and get those learning points through doing stuff instead of just me telling them stuff.
So now when a person is – when you get them involved in improv or you say you're going to use improv as part of your methodology, is that – I mean, is that scary for some people?
It is.
Would be for me.
Yeah, and it's about easing people into it. There's very simple ways to do some very simple things to kind of gauge where people are. And then you just keep building on that throughout
the
day.
What's the start?
Well, a real simple start is just say who's...
Let's make Dave do it.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll just ask a simple question. We'll say, this is so simple, but it tells you so much as a facilitator. We'll say, who's done improv before? Raise your hand. And we'll see how many raise their hand. Well, usually about half.
And oh, really?
Yeah.
Half of people have done some kind of improv? That's surprising.
A third to a half. And then I'll say how many people have never done improv before, and I'll get the rest of the people. But then I'll say who didn't raise their hand either time. Those are the outliers. Those are the people you got to kind of ease into it because they're just there because they're not really into anything.
This is their boss told them to show up.
Exactly. So we start with somebody.
So you pick on them?
No, we don't pick on them.
You bring them in first. You too. Get over here.
We just do real simple exercises like just a gibberish exercise or just a simple storytelling exercise. And most people are pretty comfortable with that one-on-one. And then you just keep building. And by the end of the day, I've got these – contractors, superintendents doing these really fun...
Like you're pulling things out of a hat and making them...
Yeah, they're doing the machine where they're doing noises and like machine movements, you know, by the end of the day. And it's that kind of play with a purpose, though, because every exercise you do has some kind of learning point associated with it. And maybe it's just as simple as, did you feel silly about getting up here and doing this? Well, what does that say about things like innovation and creativity? Are you afraid to make a mistake? Are you afraid to look silly and do something really wild that may be something that the company would say, wow, that's so great. Why aren't we doing that?
But don't you find that a lot of the employees are nervous to be that vulnerable in their company because their company hasn't earned that level of trust? And that, you know, a lot of companies say, oh, yeah, we are okay with you failing. And then if you fail, they're like, whoa, you know, what were you thinking about? You know, right. They're second guessing you're taking a shot. And then, you know, that makes everybody a little more hesitant to, you know, put something out there.
It's absolutely true, especially in the construction and, you know, contracting and engineering. Mistakes can be very expensive or they can be life threatening sometimes. Yeah. So we talk about that fine line between, you know, risk and innovation and improvisation. But we say have the capability and the skill and cultivate the environment for that. And then you can have that discernment of should we go forward with this? But if you always cut those things off and if you always say no and always say, well, we tried that back in 1970 and it didn't work.
Right. Or you're doing something, but you also have your backup of who can I blame if this doesn't work.
That's right. That's what we – it's the scapegoat method that we
call him Kevin.
Yes.
Right here.
That's right. So we always have the scapegoat. But it's really about cultivating, number one, innovation and creativity in yourself. And that's getting rid of judgment of yourself. Then it's about creating an environment of learning and innovation and creativity in the workplace, not with taking unnecessary risk, but just with opening up to possibilities. That's what it's about. And most companies are okay with that because they have that final say on, that's a little too risky, we're not going to do that. Great idea, but let's put that on the back burner for a while.
Yeah, but I mean, if Dave's been in there to help them understand the return
there
on
you
it,
go.
Then you got some real support, right?
That's right.
Because, I mean, this could be huge return if they do it and do it right and are genuinely committed to it. Yeah?
If you think about it, one of the things that he's talking about is taking it beyond the event and having it become adopted and transferred permanently as part of the work DNA in the workforce. And that's what we're all about, and that's about performance on the job. It's not about the pretty cool event, okay? But
exactly.
We're all three of us are concerned about, as every other business professional is my workforce capable of beating the other workforce in my field, all right? And if we can do this, and if you listen to him, he's got all the right tools for huge impact because it's beyond the event. One of the things that I believe in is that learning is when you finish a training class, you're in with him or you're in with Karen or you're in with me, that's the first step in the journey. And then I've found in recent studies with some of my clients, it takes 18 months to 2 years before these skills become permanently inculcated into the workforce. Yeah. That's when the impact happens. You had to have patience, but these guys are set up to be brilliantly successful with their clients.
Okay, Karen, let's talk about this upcoming event, this ACE. When is it? What it's all about? And all three of you guys you're speaking, right? You're going to be speaking at this event?
Exactly. We're going to have workshops where the professionals will come in and they will spend time in various workshops. They get an opportunity to determine where they're going to best find value. And then we have an hour and 15-minute long workshop and they rotate and you go to the next one.
So each of you are heading a workshop? Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So now yours is about?
Mine will be about driving for objectives using Outlook.
And you've already planned this?
I have. So the individuals that come to my room will bring their laptops with them. I'll give them some tips and tricks on Outlook.
And they're going to do it. So this isn't theoretical. They're going to actually plug it into their own world.
Exactly. So they will leave with some tools, both technical and behavioral, that mm-hmm. they can adopt the moment they get back to their workforce or workplace.
And Dave?
Yeah, mine's going to be on predictive evaluation. I'm going to teach the model I've been talking about.
Right.
And we're actually going to practice some of the pieces of the model. At the end, they're going to be able to actually go back to any course and predict the value, the return. Right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to give them an app. I'm going to give everybody a free app, a tool that they can use to automate that process.
Oh, so you have an app?
I do. It's an automated Excel file that I just give away to folks, and people just use it, and it does all the financial calculations, and all you have to do is really facilitate the process. Mm-hmm. So.
And Brent, in yours, going to be improv? You're going to play a game?
It's called Training is for Dogs.
Oh.
Love that title.
It's a journey from lecture-based, PowerPoint-based, through improvisational learning and gamification of learning and how to create true change with more long-term approaches to learning and training.
Now, yours has this fun element to it, obviously,
yeah.
And that's not accidental, I'm sure. Does some of your techniques, would they lend themselves to kids in like public education?
Absolutely. I'm working with colleges and universities on how to deliver training and learning in a different way because that thing is shifting so quickly. And this is also with K-12. They're doing a lot of this kind of work in Canada, but less here. But I want to do more work with kids. And this is the kids love this process.
Well, I would imagine they have less of that filter and less
right.
of that shame factor that adults have.
Well, I mean, if you look at a kindergarten learning environment, it's so rich and so, you know, with colors and textures and lots of things to do. And then you get into college and university or K through 12, and it's this horrible where you're looking at the back of people's heads.
Right,
and it's
like
very stark. And
you're
gray
going back to like the Industrial Revolution, the same techniques.
Yeah, which is the most horrible learning environment you could imagine, is sitting in a horrible gray thing with gray tables and gray walls
in,
and
in exact rows,
yes,
you know,
and listening to someone talk.
Right, you couldn't draw that up. You know, like if we were to recreate education, we would never recreate it in that manner.
No, and it's being recreated now with all this, all these MOOCs, these massive online open courses, and you know, education is becoming free, and people are learning peer to peer, and you don't need the professor anymore. You got Google now,
right?
You know,
are all of you seeing that the online aspect in your business, is that helping, hurting the way that you communicate your value proposition?
Yes, we're doing blended learning. We are, you know, we've been doing that for quite some time now. So there are some people who learn differently than others. Some people would like some one-on-one interaction. So if that's what they prefer, that's what we do. Other people learn better in groups. Other people learn better on their own time. Mm-hmm. So we have self-guided webinars that people can use. So we really try to meet the worker where he or she happens to be and provide the content in a way that has the biggest impact on them.
And I deliver stuff in what I call learning bursts, okay, which are little chunks of 20-minute pieces of learning. Think of it as a mini little course, one at a time, that you can take one at a day like a vitamin, any place you want it, independent, an audio show, PDF concept. And then so you can take it whenever you want it, as often you want it, but people, the Google thing has done it. We have such short attention spans. People want to learn in tiny little bursts of learning. So let's provide that. Let's go where the modern learner is today in the adult.
And also this way they can go back. You know, it's not like a one-off event, like you were saying earlier, where like, okay, we're all gearing up to this one big event. The event happens. They got their binder. They go back, and your work, you know, your hands are clean, and now you go on to your next thing. And then these guys put a binder on a shelf, and then nobody really wins on that. Yeah.
Now, this particular event, ACE, is on August the 13th, but ASTD, particularly the Atlanta chapter of ASTD, just does a fantastic job of providing all kinds of opportunities for professionals to collaborate, exchange best practices. We'll start with you, Brent, but just speak to your experience of being in and around ASTD Atlanta chapter, if you would.
I'm very excited about the ACE conference because I get to see a lot of these folks that are doing all these cutting-edge things, you know, like all the things that we've talked about today, plus many more. I'm excited.
But these
about
are the best things.
Yes, of course.
These are the three best, of course.
But there are others, and it's about, like, you know, what is the cutting edge of learning? And these guys are so willing to openly share all this great stuff, you know. And that's the beauty of it, is that getting that network and those best practices of what's really going on, and figuring out, you know, how can we really impact not only companies, but, you know, community and the world? And how can we take this learning thing beyond just teaching a guy one thing for a company? And how can we expand that? And I think that's what that's about, is how can we look at that bigger picture, and what are the things that are going on that we need to pay attention to be the best that we can be?
And you guys are so good about opening your arms up to up-and-comers, you know, like Phillips and Kilpatrick, some folks that could really use a little help, right?
Oh, yeah, all right. Well, and if you think about it, okay, Don Kilpatrick, I've known Don, who's now since retired, but his son Jim runs the show, does a fabulous job. Don actually wrote the foreword to my latest book, okay? And I've known him when I was head of evaluation at Motorola University back in the early 90s. And that model is spectacular. Then you got Jack Phillips, who's going to be the other keynote speaker at ACE, who is one of the what I call the thought leaders in this space. And there are two people that I look up to and build upon the show. I don't say that my model is better. It's different. But their stuff is spectacular. I want to build upon what Brent said. The ASTD chapter here in Atlanta is the absolute best. I did the rubber chicken circuit last 2 years ago when my book came out. Went to 60 ASTD chapters, talked, did my little spiel. This one is huge. It's monumental. All the SIGs that are available to it. But the one thing he said is that teachers, trainers are givers. And in this community called ASTD Atlanta, we give to each other. And this is a way of giving back to the community. And if you give, you get so much more in return.
And Karen, productive investment of time, you think, being part of ASTD Atlanta chapter?
No question. The chapter meetings are great opportunities to network with other folks that are like-minded and that are doing things. And then the ACE conference is a great time to bring everyone together. So, you know, we've got things that happen in all areas of Georgia. So we've got geographic concentrations, and then we've also got areas of focus. So if you are interested in learning more information or sharing information around training and development, there's a group that does that. If you are more interested in learning about being an independent consultant, there's a group that does that. So there are all sorts of areas that focus on some very specific content.
Well, we got to have you all back. I want to talk more about your book and have you come back. I want to dive a lot more into this improv thing and talk about affecting real change inside an organization. And Lord knows we could all get a lot better at being more productive. So we got to have you back. But as we wrap today, I want to go around the horn. We'll start with you, Karen, and make sure that our listeners have contact information if they want to reach out and have a conversation with you. And set you up to have those conversations.
Absolutely. So you can send me an email at Karen, spelled the traditional way, dot Mitchell, spelled non-traditionally, M-I-T-C-H-A-L, at McGee, McGeePro.com. More than happy to reach out to individuals to share with them, you know, whatever would help make them more productive.
And if you do send her an email, she will see it today.
That's right.
But only during, today.
But only today.
during the appointed time on my calendar, mind you.
All right, Dave.
You can find me at my website, DaveBassarab.com. All right. Is one on Twitter, at Dave Bassarab. Email is ValeLearn, V-A-L-E-Learn, at gmail.com. And go up to the website. There is a ton of free stuff up there that I give away. And you might want to just sign up for my upcoming free webinars, too.
Fantastic. Brent, can you improv a little spot there for your business?
my website is BrentDarnell.com.
Clever.
So you can get all of that there. But also I have another website called change-u.com. It's a one-stop shop to evaluate, get the resources to improve, and build an accountability. There's an accountability partner match and a mentor match. So that's sort of a new website that's just coming on online now. And I'd love to hear from people, and I love collaboration and helping people, and you know, let me know what I can do to help you.
Well, what a gift to have all three of you in the studio. What a tremendous asset you obviously are for ASTD Atlanta chapter and the profession. And my comment's quite sincere. We got to have you guys back. There's just too much good stuff to talk about.
Love to come back.
We would love that. Thank you so much.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights.